You're listening to Panel Borders, the podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and this episode, which continues December's Gay Comics Month, is the first of two shows looking at the winners of 2008's Queer Press Grant, awarded by Prism Comics, which has the aim of nurturing emerging talent from the LGBT community. Both of this year's winners create comics that use and subvert superhero tropes, and in this episode, which is an extended version of the broadcast interview, I'm talking to Tommy Roddy, the creator of Pride High, which is a hipper version of the X-Men that allows the gay characters of a superhero school to take center stage, while dealing with issues of oppression and their mortal enemies.
The Queer Press Grant, is that something that's organized by Prism Comics, or is it just something that they administrate?
They organize that. They do the fundraising, the publicity for it, so it's all them.
When it comes to the recognition that has within the gay comics community, is it something that people take very seriously?
You know, I think that's something where time will tell.
Okay.
You know, once the trade paperback actually gets out there, and I will be placing a little stamp on it that says Queer Press Grant winner.
Okay.
And I think it's done a really good job, at least with the online community, but it's really hard to tell how much that will actually translate to the hardcore comic book buyers who actually go into the stores, because there is overlap between the communities, definitely, but I think that it's definitely boosted my profile with people who buy the comic online, just as a digital PDF.
Cool. In a way, it's something a bit like the Zerik grant, that it just raises profiles of indie creators a bit more, that maybe if you didn't know where to start with reading a gay comic, it brings you a little bit more press, if nothing else.
Well, that's definitely the hope. So, I really do hope so.
In the UK, it seems to be very hard to get hold of gay comics. There's lots of yaoi, but when it comes to British and American gay comics, they seem to be very hard to get hold of. Presumably in America, it's actually a lot easier.
I think a large part of that has to do with Prism Comics.
Right.
They've really led the way in terms of getting the word out there, letting people know that there's actually a scene for gay comics in this country. So I don't think I've actually heard of an equivalent organization in the UK. There might be one, but I just don't know of it.
I think both in America and in the UK, there's a real debate about gay representation in comics. But then in this country, when it comes to trying to get people organized to talk about it, they're very thin on the ground.
That's a good point. I think that Prism, you know, it's basically just built up. Once the ball got rolling, it really started to get a move on. And, you know, I know for myself, Pride High wouldn't have been possible at all if it wasn't for Prism Comics, because, you know, they were the ones who really got me in touch with the different online resources out there for creating comic books from scratch, and it's too bad that the UK doesn't have that.
I think the thing is, it's probably, when it comes to gay literature, for example, in the UK, there's still, it's a niche within bookshops, and because comics are then a niche as well, it's sort of like a minority within a minority, and so it's finding, you know, the visibility that we really need an organization like Prism over here in order for them to have a voice.
Right, that's a good point too. I think especially because here in the United States, comic book adaptations have done so well on the big screen, so that's really elevated the status of comic books just within popular culture, so that people aren't so embarrassed anymore to say that they like comic books. But what is it like in the UK in that sense?
Well, the thing is, I mean, we obviously have Free Comic Book Day over here as well, but I just don't think there's enough awareness that even, you know, the most popular films like Iron Man and Batman, that you can just go into a comic shop and buy the latest adventures. It seems absurd, but I suppose people think of comics as something that they had in their youth, and it doesn't occur to them to go to their high street and realize that there are still comic shops selling these things.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because I think that's why everything's so dominated by yaoi, just because, you know, coming from the Japanese market, people in Japan are much more comfortable dealing with comic books with adult themes. And I don't mean erotic at all, just adult in terms of, you know, we're not talking about little kiddie comics anymore. And the fact that Japan puts out so much material that, you know, you've got so many people behind it, and it's no surprise that that's such a huge part of the market in other countries is Japanese-based comics.
Well, I was reading on your biography on the Prism website that you did your degree in ethnic and sexual minority communities in Japan. So presumably gay representation in manga was something that you came across as you were studying, or was it something you always had an interest in?
That was one of the things that I studied, and I think that a lot of work has been done on that, on the community, as well as just that's what I based a lot of my work on when I was studying in college, and it definitely influenced Pride High. I think that there were certain very common things that would go into yaoi that I wanted to avoid. And I guess some of it would be a spoiler if I actually went into it in too much detail, but it definitely informed my writing a lot.
I mean, had you always wanted to be a comic book writer?
No, not at all.
Okay.
The original plan was to be a doctor, specifically studying the intersections of Western medicine and Eastern medicine in Japan. And that was the big plan. But life has a way of taking some unexpected twists and turns. And I have to say that my parents, they were not surprised at all when I sent them the first copy of Pride High. They always do. But I guess they knew more than I did in that regard.
But presumably you were always a Western comic book reader, because there seems to be very heavy elements of Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men referred to in Pride High.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would say comics in general, and I, you know, both Western as well as manga. And I think the biggest influences were, well, not just the X-Men, but just any comic book that dealt with teens, because teens have always been my favorite. And I originally had an idea for a comic book, and you know, I got started on this and everything, which was about an adult group of superheroes that they all happened to be openly gay, except for one or two. But the whole point was that they were unable to get actual jobs because they kept getting rejected from various supergroups. And the reasons were never about them being gay, but when you're told enough times, you start to wonder, you know, why am I getting the door closed in my face all the time? So that was the original idea, and I bounced it around with my editors. I found an artist for it, and then literally, just at the last moment, right before work was set to start, I totally changed my mind, and I realized that the kids that had formed kind of as an offshoot of the original story started to take precedence, and that's what started Pride High.
It's funny, because since the X-Men movies came out, people go on about how being a mutant is very obviously a parallel to being a minority in a minority group, whether you're black or gay or Asian or whatever. And yet, while there seems to be increasing number of reasonably well-written international characters in Western comics, there are still very badly written gay characters. It seems odd when superhero comics in general seem to be so homoerotic that there are still very few well-written gay characters.
Well, I think a large part of that has to do with the fact that, you know, there are stages of acceptance. And, you know, I think obviously one big stage is when people are even comfortable enough to deal with the subject via metaphor.
Yeah.
And I totally see the value in that, and I'm glad that we've had comic books that deal with, you know, sexual orientation as well as ethnicity by metaphor, but I think that sometimes you can get so trapped into talking about a subject through the metaphor that you forget that, you know, okay, we've done this enough. It's time that we actually talk about the subject matter itself out in the open. So that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to have a comic book that had teens with superpowers that, you know, they also were gay. You know, being gay and being a mutant, these aren't mutually exclusive terms, but you start to get the sense of that when you watch certain movies or when you read certain comics, when they can only deal with sexual orientation as, you know, someone who's an alien or someone who's dealing with coming out as a superhero.
Yeah, or I suppose when you do have gay characters, for example, in Marvel comics, it's because they're actually a shape-changing alien or transgender or something rather than actually gay.
Right, exactly. And I know that you're talking about Runaways. Is that what you're referring to? It's definitely getting better. I totally appreciate living in this time period where I can actually have a comic book like Pride High. And I think that, you know, one of the odd things that I discovered when I was first marketing Pride High is that I think that some otherwise progressive people were a little bit concerned because it's a comic book that's dealing with youth and it's also dealing with LGBT themes. And I think that there's kind of the sense for some people that, you know, members of the gay community only appear at 21. Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle sometimes. And, you know, always having to explain to people that gay comics doesn't automatically mean erotic comics, which I love gay erotic comics, don't get me wrong. But I think that it was somewhat humorous where when people would assume that Pride High was an erotic title just because it was gay-themed.
Yeah, it's interesting because looking at the way that the gay issues are portrayed in American media and the way they are in the UK media, it seems that it's much easier to be an adult gay member of the community in the UK than it is in the US, but there's absolutely no representation of gay teens or children in this country. It's just that in some ways America is more forward, but in other ways Britain is more backward.
Do you watch Hollyoaks at all?
I suppose. I mean, yeah, you've got the soap opera characters, but I mean, in terms of America, for example, you know, there's the Harvey Milk School, etc. But over here, I can't think of any, you know, charities or whatever that talk about what it's like to be a gay teenager or a gay child in the UK.
You know, actually, there is a rather large group in the UK, and I'm totally blanking out on their name, but they contacted me a while back.
Okay.
It's basically an organization that keeps various gay straight alliances at UK schools connected, and I feel so bad that I forgot their name. But, you know, I see what you're saying, though. But I definitely think, though, that soap opera characters, the fact that you had these two characters, JP and Craig, on Hollyoaks, I'm a total Hollyoaks fan, so, you know, I think that it was just so amazing to show that these kids, you know, in school, and one of the most realistic things that they showed was that, you know, they identified as straight first, and it took a lot of, you know, soul searching to realize that their mutual attraction was actually real, and I think they did a very good job with the storyline, and I'm sorry, I'm a big fan, so I could go on and on and on about it, but I was just amazed, though, because you really don't get to see too much of that in American TV. Because a lot of times, they will usually take characters that are not main characters, and they get one or two episodes, and then they're gone. Whereas with Hollyoaks, I mean, you had one of the major themes for, you know, over a year to be this love story between two teenagers. So,
okay,
that's a big mark of progress.
Well, then maybe that's kind of the point that I'm getting at, that you can have a representation of gay teens in the media in this country, which you can't in America. But then in America, there are organizations designed to support gay teens, while in this country, they're not that obvious.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. I haven't thought about that.
When it came to Pride High, something that seems to be very important to you is also to have a wide range of ethnicity. I don't know if that's a subject that is something that's still being debated in the gay community, you know, lack of representation of other ethnicities.
Someone else had brought this up a while back, and I think that they were a little surprised in that there's a general assumption when dealing with comics, because, yes, the people who actually make comics, a majority of them are straight white men. And so with Pride High, one of the things I had to explain to someone was that the entire team behind Pride High, especially at the very beginning, we're all multi-ethnic. So writing these stories and coming together and creating these characters is a very collaborative process, and all of us have connections to a lot of the identities that are presented there. So it's not like we said, oh, we must have this character to represent this, or we must have this character to represent that. These characters, I mean, those communities presented are just parts of our lives. And, you know, one thing that was very important for me is you don't get to see multiracial characters in comic books very often. And I think that, you know, one point, if you look at a comic book that's written by a team of majority straight white men, and they have characters that are mostly straight white people, no one actually sits back and thinks, oh, there's some sort of agenda behind this, or there's something very specific about these choices. And I think the same can be said for Pride High. It's just, that's who we are.
Mm. What's the distribution been like of the comic? Obviously, it has both a web presence and a physical presence.
Well, it's still pretty small, I would say. It's still very, very small. Part of that is just because I'm only able to sell in a couple of stores here in California. And that was part of what the grant was about, was to get distribution nationwide. Unfortunately, the economic situation in the United States has been pretty bad recently, so it's put a big damper on my fundraising goals. Mm. So I'm hoping 2010, maybe late 2009, I might have a trade paperback with the first seven issues, but not so sure. I would say the majority of the people who check out Pride High, it's still online. That's the majority of the fan base right now, online and at comic book conventions.
I mean, have you had interest from comic shops around the U.S.? I mean, because I imagine it would do just as well on the East Coast in cities like New York.
Oh, yes, there is one store, Big Monkey Comics, in Washington, D.C., that sells Pride High, but a lot of it is just pure economics.
Right.
There are stores that would love to sell it, but in terms of my cost to print and to ship, it's just not feasible to do more than a couple of stores, because for small publishers like myself or self-publishers, it's just really tough to print out a lot of copies, because a lot of printing presses have minimum print runs. And we're talking, you know, like 5,000 copies that you have to pay up front for. And that's a big hurdle to get over. So that's one of the reasons why I'm waiting to do a trade paperback before I release nationwide, because just financially, it's so much more feasible to have everything done, have a print run of 5,000 for a trade paperback versus doing 5,000 for each single issue.
Well, and I suppose it also seems to be a way of distribution that's becoming increasingly popular, that people may do the first half dozen issues of their comic purely on the web and then bring out a trade paperback, so there isn't an intermediate floppy version. Also, I noticed that you do Pride High in a variety of different languages. Was that something that was important to you from the start as well?
It was. Unfortunately, I've been lagging a little bit with that, but I wanted to make sure that the story was available in just, you know, it's a big gay world out there, and I wanted to make it as widely available as possible. I have to thank all of the fans who actually did the translations, because you know, they did it totally voluntarily, and they had that same passion behind it. But at the same time, it's a lot of work. Translation is a lot of work. So I'm hoping that actually once the trade paperback is done, then I can go back and have people actually translate all of the issues.
Right.
The other side point to that is, it was really important for me to have it in Braille. That was the one that I was really adamant about, and that's simply because, you know, one of the main characters is blind, and I really think it's important if you have a character, you know, in a comic book from a community that isn't really represented very often in comic books, they should be able to take part in they should be able to access the narrative as well. And so that's why it was also, well, obviously it's a very visual medium, but short story adaptations were then transcribed into Braille.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. How does the Braille version work? Do you have descriptions, sort of like filmic descriptions of the art in a way?
Yes. Actually, it was another fan who took it upon himself to go in, and he did a really great job. His name is John, and he did a lot of descriptions based on senses other than sight. So it reads a little bit differently than what you would expect for just a standard short story. But I got feedback from the transcriptionist, and she really enjoyed the story and thought that, she was wondering, when's the next issue coming? I really wanted to see the next issue. So
cool.
Yes.
So is it the translators who get the first choice of appearing as characters in the comic? Because I notice on the back page of, or the second to last page of all your issues, you have the following readers are appearing in this comic as.
Oh, well, The Dutch translator, he was a part of the original creative team. And so his character is Scotch Bonnet. So, you know, obviously, he created main character, so he's involved or was involved with the first issue. But I would say that the readers who actually have characters in the comic book, they're the readers who have been the most active on Pride High's fan boards.
Okay.
And, you know, so they've submitted characters, they've talked about their characters. It's just people who have given me enough of a sense of what their characters were about, at least in the very beginning, that I could add them to the comic book. It's grown a lot bigger now, so now there are tons of people who have submitted characters, and obviously there's only so much room for people, but I'm doing my best to add cameos here and there, and it's been a lot of fun. Actually, I'm not sure, did you get a chance to read through the issues that I sent?
I've read the first three. Yeah, I enjoyed them very much.
Actually, thank you. The issue four is one of the reader characters joined the main cast, and he was featured on the cover, so the creator was pretty happy about that. And you actually start to see more reader character involvement as the storyline goes on. And I've actually I completely rewrote 6, 7, and 8 due to reader character involvement. I have an outline where I know where the story starts, I know where it ends, but the journey and how we get there exactly is totally being influenced by reader input.
Okay.
Which has been a lot of fun.
So it's a very collaborative process then?
Yes, yes.
Excellent.
I think for myself, that was one of the things that influenced my decision to go with the teen comic book idea, just because by setting it at a high school, it allows you to, it's the perfect device to have characters who you'll see in some issues, but then you don't see them in others. It's a big school. People have classes with different kids. It's a much more organic process than I think if we had a single supergroup that had all these guest characters just stopping by. So that's part of the reason why I went with Pride High versus the original idea.
And actually, that's something that's always been slightly unrealistic, for want of a better word, about the X-Men, is it always seemed to be a very small school.
Right, right.
Well, they've
gotten a little bit better about that, but I know what you mean.
How tempting has it been throughout the issues to sort of do your own version of archetypal superhero characters? Because I noticed in the second issue there's a flashback or a flash forward to characters that seem to be referring to Batman and Robin.
Oh, that was actually, those two characters are my editor and friend, Carl Hippensteel. He created Mischief and Kid Mischief, and so he's always been a big fan of Batman and Robin, so I think that he kind of wanted his own version of that. But, I mean, the characters are very different, but just having that older mentor, I think also, too, it was really important to him because I think just within the gay community, one of the things that's so tough is that I think compared to other minority groups, our parents don't share our struggle, or generally don't. I mean, obviously, there are gay kids who do have gay parents, but I think by and large, there can be this large disconnect between what we go through and what our parents have gone through, so they're not really available to really help us with a personal perspective on things. So I think it's so important for the younger generation to have that connection with the older gay generation. I think that's one of the reasons why I love living in San Francisco so much, is because I have older gay friends who, you know, I think are able to connect younger gay people to the history that we have together that we kind of have to search for. So having that sort of relationship was pretty important, and that's why I added those characters. And actually, originally, Kid Mischief wasn't even... he's pretty much become the main character of the series, and it didn't always start out that way, but Carl's ideas totally won me over. And I'm a pretty collaborative guy. I like to get other ideas. I like to bounce things off of other people, and it's worked out so far.
Well, I suppose inevitably comics in general are a collaborative medium. You need to have some kind of sympathetic method with your artist if you're collaborating with someone and bounce ideas off each other.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
In the next episode of Panel Borders, I'm talking to Justin Hall, the other winner of the 2008 Queer Press Grant, about his comic Glamazonia, which tells the tale of a transgender superheroine who fights mythical creatures, serial killers, and old-fashioned superhero origin stories. You can find more info about Tommy and Justin's comics at www.prismcomics.org and on my blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com. If you live in London or are planning to visit during the next week, London Underground Comics are holding an exhibition of artwork and original canvases at the Alphabet Bar in Beak Street in Soho, which starts at lunchtime on the 13th of December with a mini small press comics convention and DJ supplying a soundtrack to the pictures, and continues until the 20th. For more info about that, please go to www.londonundergroundcomics.com. Thanks for listening.